course, we're all excited about the election, or perhaps we're all excited about the prospect of the election eventually being over. A lot of turmoil in both parties this year, especially perhaps in recent weeks and months with the GOP trying to deal with Donald Trump and what to do moving forward. Obviously, win or lose is going to make a big impact there on how the GOP develops in coming months and years. But we can talk now about how the party should develop and where it should go. And joining us now is Orange County Conservative Ashley DeSena. How's it going?
Good. Thank you, Aaron.
So we're talking about this. We're talking about the GOP after the election, 2 months before the election. So there's still a lot of uncertainty about who's going to win, who's going to lose. And obviously, if Hillary Clinton wins or if Donald Trump wins, that's going to make a big difference in terms of what the GOP strategy is moving forward. But what should the GOP strategy be moving forward? You're a never Trumper. You're getting there. A Cruz supporter.
Right.
So you're sort of on that side of the line. So
ardent former Cruz supporter when we were back still in the primary stage. We are still a couple of months away. So I'm going to say all but Trump. Something could change, it just doesn't seem too likely. I'll say it at that point, or at this point. But I think that regardless of what happens in the election, whether Hillary Clinton wins or whether Donald Trump wins, I think that the Republican Party is going to face a reckoning of some sort, because I don't think that Trump will be able to reshape the party in his image, which is kind of what that's my interpretation of his campaign thus far, is what he's trying to do. And, so that's if he gets elected. If he doesn't get elected, then I think that there's going to be just huge, gnashing of teeth and consternation. and as the GOP factionalizes, and there's going to be a lot of infighting, I'm sure there will be some people will say, well, he lost because he wasn't conservative enough. Mm-hmm. And some people will say that, we should be more willing to be more populist, but in a different way or something. I mean, it'll just run the gamut, of course. But I think that in the end, perhaps regardless of whether win or lose, there won't be a real conservative chance or a chance for us to have a conservative president again for at least 8 more years, at best case 16 more years, because I don't think that the GOP is going to figure out a way to get a conservative message across.
At which point conservatism will look very different than it does today.
Right. Well, it's interesting because one of the things that, prior to today when you emailed me and, is this going to end up like another 1964 election with Barry Goldwater, who was a Republican nominee, lost in a landslide to Johnson? He was considered an extremist of sorts within his own party.
And got up at the convention and sort of embraced that label. It wasn't even other people saying that about him.
So both he and Trump definitely reject calls for their party. Of course, Goldwater had always been a Republican, Trump not so much. But to change, to fall in line with, the mainstream party principles. They refuse to go to the middle, and that's something that made Goldwater unpopular within his own party. And the same thing, we can see that happening to Trump. And it doesn't help that Trump is doesn't seem willing to court or woo people over to his brand of Republican Party-ism. I don't know if I couldn't call it conservatism.
Although I think he's willing to do that to an extent, because there's certain issues that are obviously like his issues, like immigration and things like that. But there's other issues that he clearly doesn't care about, like I think taxes, for instance, and health care, and probably also guns and sort of social issues and things like that, where Sure. I honestly don't think for a second Donald Trump cares one way or the other what the country does, but he's willing to sort of adopt the GOP platform in order to get people on his side that way.
Yeah. No,
and I think he could just as easily go the other way.
I think he's just willing to say whatever he thinks will get him elected, quite honestly. And so he's kind of baseless as far as principles, which I find puts him in stark contrast with Goldwater, although the election outcome may look the same. Yeah. And according to polls, that is the way we're headed. That may change. But if Trump lost in a landslide, you know, I would be more likely to argue that it's not even close to the same reason the Goldwater lost, because Goldwater, in contrast, stuck to his principles over his party, whereas Trump is just willing to say whatever he thinks will be popular. Of course, I would find it to be a challenge to try to figure out, you know, what conservative principles are at this point, because it seems like all conservatives are willing to agree on is that we all are pro Second Amendment, but everything else is sort of up in the air.
Okay, we're speaking with Ashley DeSena, talking about the future of the GOP after the 2016 election. Again, still up in the air who wins, who loses, obviously, but in the aftermath of Donald Trump. And the sort of the motivation behind this conversation is we're talking, a lot of people are saying, well, if Donald Trump wins in the landslide or loses in a landslide, then that's the end of that movement. And we were talking about this earlier, right? But we were talking about this earlier, and people said literally exactly the same thing about Barry Goldwater in 1964. Man, if Goldwater loses in a landslide, which in fact he did, well, that's the end of that movement, and it'll be the sort of Rockefeller, sort of more moderate side of the Republican Party that moves forward from there on out.
The establishment.
And in fact, exactly the establishment, right, and exactly the opposite happened. 1966, there were big gains for the GOP in the midterm elections, and it was all of Goldwater's people. Like, all of his supporters got together, they had the momentum, they had the movement, and they were the ones who won the elections. Ronald Reagan, who becomes a national political figure by delivering the speech at the 64 convention for Goldwater. He gets elected governor in California.
That's
and
true.
It's that wing that moves forward. So I think it's premature to say if Donald Trump loses, that's the end of that movement. I'm worried that that's where the life of the party is going to be from there on out. And I'm not 100% sure. But that's a good point that you made about, like, that's very fundamentally different.
Yeah, well, I'm worried about that, too. But I think that, just to sort of reiterate what I said before, I think that the difference is that I'm not sure how much of a guiding principle that Trump offers to the party as a whole, because, you know, if there's going to be other people within the party who want to take on this message, because he's been so inconsistent, I don't know what kind of a legacy of intellectual thought he's going to leave in his wake after this election. I mean, I don't know if, like, Barry Goldwater wrote a book. It was sort of a manifesto, the name of which I can't remember now.
Conscience of a Conservative.
Yes.
Yes, right? Yeah.
Conscience
of a Conservative.
Well, I don't know. Everyone can look it up on Amazon.
Yeah.
but, you know, he had everything all well thought out. And you could tell, and I watched his acceptance speech at the nomination. I was watching it on my phone last night when I was, you know, chopping vegetables for dinner or something, and it was just
some people watch Parks and Rec episodes.
Yeah, I guess that can give you a lot of political insight too. Yeah. It sure can, because, you know, well, it's a great show. But I mean, I was just like, just slack-jawed. Like, I mean, I wish I could vote for Barry Goldwater. He's like seriously my ideal candidate. I mean, no wonder no one understands what I'm saying, because I'm saying stuff that people were talking about 52
years ago.
Yeah, I'm using totally different language. But that's the challenge that conservatives face. You know, how do you use the language that people can hear, and how do they understand it? And I would argue that the most important thing is that they stick to principles rather than just you know, what they called in Goldwater's era, the Me Too Republicans that would just, you know, go along to get along just to get elected. And so it's going to be, like I said, a reckoning no matter what happens after the election in November. But I think I hope that at least that this brand of populism will fade and they'll come up with something more along that is at least principled, more along the lines of how Reagan got elected 16 years after Goldwater.
Speaking with Ashley DeSena, we've actually got to shift gears in just a second because we're getting information about the Board of Elections here, and we've got Blake Hodge in the studio. But before we do, one more question about this, and then we'll talk about this other thing. Do you see there as being sort of an inevitable break in the party after this election, again, win or lose, between the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump forces? And regardless of which side ends up emerging as sort of the dominant force in the Republican Party, where does the other side go?
Right. No, that's a good question. Because I think that there is this divide, not just between the elites of the party or the establishment or whatever you want to call it, and the sort of the rank and file, but you just have intellectual differences as well. I mean, people who are economically conservative but are more, I guess you could say, socially liberal, but I would still say it's based on a traditional classical liberalism kind of liberal. And I don't know if they'll find a home within the Libertarian Party. I kind of wish that those types of folks would sort of take over the Libertarian Party, because quite frankly, the Libertarians have disappointed me this time around. They don't seem to be much for liberty in a lot of important ways at all, like religious liberty and gun rights and such. But I think that that's one possibility. Because I think that the religious underpinnings that informed the sort of the Reagan era have diminished so much that they're not going to be a factor anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of force emerges that is more cohesive, like, sort of the moral majority used to be.
We'll have to continue to revisit that over the course of the campaign and beyond. We've got Blake Hodge in the studio here now, and we're going to shift gears entirely. But stay with us, because this is something that we might want to get you in on as well. Blake is joining us with information about the Board of Elections in Orange County. We talked about this last week, that they had their meeting. They voted 2-1 on an early voting plan, and now they're submitting 2 additional early voting plans to the State Board of Elections on top of the one that already got voted on?
We've been hearing rumors about this for about a week now, of the
Board of Elections altering plans a little bit and submitting additional plans. And we heard last week they were trying to find a way to really undo the vote that was done in the Board of Elections meeting that was more than 2 hours long and had a lot of public comment, and they have apparently not been able to find a way to do that. So 2 additional early voting plans will be submitted by the Orange County Board of Elections. We were hearing from Tracy Reams just a couple of minutes ago on the phone with her to get confirmation on this. But we heard rumblings initially about this after the plan was voted on, and this was in the fallout after the Dallas Woodhouse memo, you want to call it that, was sent out saying, stick to party lines here and we'll get the plans that we want, which included no Sunday voting and less weekend voting in general, according to that memo that he sent out. So what we've got now is, it seems like there may have been some backlash over the little bit of a compromise that was found at the Orange County Board of Elections level. There was still no Sunday voting or anything like that, but there was an increase in hours, and there was the hours on the weekend, of course, still. But 2 additional plans will be submitted out. The chair of the board, Kathy Knight, will be submitting her own plan, which has 545 hours, which is less than the compromise plan that was agreed to.
It was 500
off the top of my head. It was 565, okay. I believe, off the top of my head there. So don't hold me exactly to that. But what was done to get those extra few hours was extending hours Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right the last few days of the early voting period to 7:30 instead of 7 o'clock, and also having those Saturday hours extended from 9 to 4 on those couple of weekends before the final Saturday. That final Saturday was still just 9 to 1 because of all the logistics that go into closing down the early voting period. So she is going to submit that plan. Jamie Cox, the Democratic member of the board, is going to submit his original plan, which had 6 sites. It had the 5 sites agreed to plus University Place, and a total of 739 hours, with Sunday voting being included in that as well. So it's really just throwing all of this into a very hurried, fluid state. So the way that this is going to work now, it will all go to the Board of Elections.
Including the one that was voted on, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is not, none of the two additional plans have not been submitted so far. They have until Thursday to submit these additional plans. The Board of Elections will then have a majority plan because it was voted on in an open meeting.
Right.
So they'll have that plan, which we reported on and all this other. They will have that go to the Board of Elections as the majority plan because it did have two votes. Bob Randall will be able to submit his early voting plan, which is pretty much the 2012 plan, except put an extra hour on every day.
Yeah.
And then you'll have these two additional minority plans now going forward from each of the members that
voted
had
for
a compromise.
The other one.
Now,
yeah.
What seems to be the discrepancy that they're hanging on here is it was a very long meeting. At the end of it, everybody seemed to be quite frustrated and just wanted to stick to their guns and be able to get a little bit of ground either way. And that's pretty much what they agreed to. Whenever they were calculating the hours, they did miscalculate the hours initially and said the wrong number during the board meeting. So what they're saying is that the chair didn't really know what she was voting for, it sounds like, in terms of the overall number of hours, because their calculations were a little bit off in the moment there. But now they are both submitting their own minority plans in addition to the majority plan that they had agreed to, and then Bob Randall will still go forward submitting his own minority plan. Tracy Ream said that was, they have them written up, they have until Thursday to submit them. So it is going forward. She said they are going to be submitting two additional early voting plans to go to the state board. So it'll go in front of the state board. All three of the board members will go and argue their own cause. The State Board of Elections still has that one plan as the majority plan that they'll have to decide on. And we'll all be waiting and seeing where we go from there.
So, all right.
A little bit of an altered state from where we thought we were.
Is there
last
a trophy
week
for being the most dysfunctional county? Because we're on the nominees list now for that. Okay, so Kathy Knight's proposal versus the majority proposal. What's the? It's 20 hours fewer, but then you mentioned some expansions of hours.
Right. It's that was the compromise plan expanded hours.
Okay.
It basically took
7:30 instead of 7.
7:30 instead of 7, and then some hours on Saturdays in particular.
Okay.
From 9 to 4. I think it added an extra hour on every Saturday location, that kind of thing.
So Kathy Knight's is basically the same with a little bit of
it's
of
just
hour
a little hour reduction from where we were with the compromise plan. What they did was they took her plan, and then Mr. Jamie Cox was able to get a little bit of give on that is ultimately what it came down to. And now they're going back to no give. So he's submitting his own plan with no give and 739 hours, 200 more hours than what she is submitting. Now, a couple of the people that spoke during that public comment period were the commissioners who said, we've already talked, will fund whatever needs to be funded. And that has been a concern in terms of setting up the additional early voting hours. So the commissioners are saying the money will be there if it needs to be there. And now we'll have to wait on the State Board of Elections to tell which plan will actually go forward here.
We do have Ashley DeSen in the studio. I know we're all just hearing about this, but thoughts or...
Wow.
yeah, that was my initial thought as well.
My first question is, is this exceptional, or is every county going through the same kind of dysfunction?
I know that some of the board meetings that we've seen reports from have had maybe a similar tone to what happened in Orange County, where you had an at times raucous crowd making their voices known. And from what we've seen, a lot of those crowds are not to limit the early voting period. It seems that the early voting crowd and expansion of early voting crowd has gotten out in a grassroots effort to fill up these board meetings and make their voices heard. And there are some cases that from that perspective may seem unwinnable, thinking of Watauga County as the example that typically comes up. But I haven't seen anything go quite like this where they did ultimately vote on a plan, 2-1. It wasn't a unanimous vote, but they voted on an early voting majority plan at least, and then to circle back and say, to seem like you've come off of that compromise a little bit. I don't I can't think of another situation like this that we're seeing at the moment.
Weird.
Wow.
So when is the State Board of Elections is meeting when again?
Well, we don't know. There is no date right now as to when. They're going to submit these by Thursday, it sounds like, because that's the deadline to submit is Thursday, these additional plans. Now, from there, the State Board of Elections is going to have to evaluate what they have to settle when it comes down to it, really. If you got a unanimous plan, you got a unanimous plan, just go on with it. But for all of these that have to be settled, they're going to have to set up these public hearings, really, where the public will be allowed to be there, it seems like, but the Board of Election members will actually be there presenting why their plan should be the plan approved and to go forward with. Now, the majority plan will have that little asterisk. This is the one that they voted on in a majority, but you know, they'll now have to review four different plans from the three-member board to get an early voting plan officially nailed down in Orange County.
All right. I hope the Supreme Court doesn't stay that earlier court decision, because then everything starts all over again.
And they'll have to match whatever hours they initially have agreed to here. So over the 17-day period. I know that was a concern whenever they were going through the initial plan or deciding and voting phase, was if this does get stayed and it goes back to having to match hours over the 17-hour period by expanding hours in this one phase, you could, you know, work yourself into a bit of a pickle there.
All right. That might be an understatement. All right. We got to wrap up. But Blake, thank you so much. We'll keep talking about that. Ashley DeSena, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again soon.